end and leave me free to check my own security and deal with the supposed intruder, I'll be grateful. I don't know what the Mitsubishi are thinking right now, but I hear they trust you, and the last thing I need is Hive execs in a tizzy thinking there's something wrong with my security. Your security's vindication I shall undertake, he answered, inclining his head in confirmation of the pledge. Thisbe intruded, her voice now, as well as her presence. The last thing we need is a public tizzy. J.E.D.D. Mason's gaze fell now upon Thisbe Sinir. No one comes to stone the servant when they could watch the execution of the king. Sniper physically interposed himself between J.E.D.D. Mason and intruding Thisbe, and I think the distant Duke President would have been glad to know Sniper was so mindful of his warning. I think we're okay on the public front. No one's here except our people, Mitsubishi people, and Cousin Foster. My Dominic may be here, J.E.D.D. Mason warned. Have you seen him? He is perhaps your height, vicious, in dark costume, with a black law hiveless sash. I seek him. He was last seen here, but has gone stray. Occam and Thisbe did not remember observing that the guest used he for Dominic. It was too far from the strangest thing he did. That's who it is, Cato Weeksbooth texted. He could hear all through the door. In B block. They're on camera. Not now, almost an hour ago. The system didn't register it as an intruder, but there was somebody there. I was having trouble with the ID. It's that scary Black Law sensei. Dominic Seneschal? Occam said it aloud. Dominic Seneschal works for you, Council Mason. Does that mean you work with Martin Gildbreaker? Both Martin and Dominic are mine, yes. But Martin is well. It is Dominic who strays. His tracker has been off since he entered this house yesterday. When was he last sighted? Tracker off since yesterday? Here, reader, is your rare chance to see Sniper show fear. Did anyone see Seneschal leave the house yesterday? Then he texted, Leslie, did you? No, I last saw them near Thisbe's room. Glances flew between Occam and Sniper. Who else was here then? I was, Carlyle volunteered, stepping gently forward. I didn't see them leave either. But they couldn't stay in the house for 24 hours with no one noticing, right? Not in this house, with your security. J.E.D.D. Mason's eyes turned back to Occam. While your case is mine, your gates will open for my Dominic. Cato texted, Zhao He Wang is right, Occam. Our system has the scary sensei registering with the same super-executive access privileges you do. More, they also have the back-end system editing privileges I do, and looks like they use them to clear records of themselves. You know the setting we use to make the system not record our secure meetings? They turned that on themselves. With this, they could wander anywhere, and the system would just delete the records. They may well have been in here all night. Occam took a deep breath. This is intolerable, Council Mason. I know you and your team were chosen for your discretion, but this is 10 times as disruptive as the Black Sakura list turning up in the first place. I agree, J.E.D.D. Mason answered. It is not tolerated. Dominic will be disciplined when found. They know this. Carlyle says that even with the airy naturalness of J.E.D.D. Mason's tone, the word disciplined had an ominous sense of corporeality to it, invited by the familiaris armband with its reminder of Masonic force and the Black Law sash around Dominic's waist, proclaiming his renunciation of all protections of the law. You have my promise and my apology, as one responsible for whom I send. The apology eased Occam's scowl somewhat. You and Martin Gildbreaker have been reasonably helpful. Yourself, very helpful, in fact, but that fact gladdens me, he interrupted. Good, but I don't want you coming here again unannounced. No one comes here unannounced, ever. Understood? A pause. Factually untrue. But as a wish, I understand it, and shall endeavor to help it approach truth. Occam took a moment to parse that one. Good. And I want that black law out of my house and away from my Bosch mates, forever. Get them out of here, or I will. He tapped his deadly sidearm, still in his hand for lack of the holster which rested upstairs with his other clothes. Sniper joined the threat, tapping his own holster, though with a touch of frown, since what he carried was not deadly, or even elegant like the sport pistols he used for the pentathlon, but a common stun gun, unworthy in his hand like instant noodles on a gourmet's tongue. These prayers I shall endeavor to grant. If I fail to prevent an altercation between yourselves and my Dominic, I should be infinitely grateful if you spared his life. I wish J.E.D.D. Mason could have expression in his voice, emotion in his face, for moments like this when I am sure the deadness of his request kept them from understanding how passionate a plea it was, how literal, how vast his fear when Dominic was threatened. I am told my third was near here too, he continued. He is shorter, in servicer uniform, full of guilt, cunning, and languages, and answers to Mycroft. I hoped he might have seen the stray. Occam, Sniper, and even Carlyle looked to Thisbe. I know who you mean, but Mycroft isn't here now, she answered. If I see them, I'll ask. J.E.D.D. Mason moved his flesh again now, calm, precise steps back toward the narrow entrance hall. I thank you for your hospitality. You're leaving? He did not turn, but his eyes found Sniper. Your Occam tasked me to settle the high political concerns raised by this event. This I undertake. But you yourself do not want me here. If my Martin and Mycroft are more comfortable to you, then henceforth let all my work within this house be theirs. Even Sniper stared in puzzlement. Yes. Yes, that sounds good. He looked to Occam. Occam. Agreed. Thank you for coming, Council Mason. Thank you for doing what you can to keep this out of the public eye and to shield us from high politics and hive leader idiocy, which seems to be primarily responsible for the day's fiasco. But thank you just as much for leaving us to handle our own ourselves. J.E.D.D. Mason paused but did not turn. It may not help. Secrets pour out like water, even from a single hole. Now curiosity bested even Sniper. What do you— Occam shook his head. Stop, Cardigan. How Sniper hates that name. Just let them go. All under Occam's command watched in rapt but disciplined silence as this strangest of princes padded away on his nearly lifeless feet. Carlyle was not under Occam's command. How did you do that? He gave a little running chase to catch the visitor in the barren trophy hall. J.E.D.D. Mason's slow gaze fell now upon the gag gene. You cannot be this Bash's sensei. The comment struck strangely, but Carlyle managed a smile. I'm new. What befell your predecessor? Too uncomfortable. How did you know? Carlyle pressed. Back there? You knew. Confession. Karma. Even after all was already exposed, the sensei would not speak the forbidden names of faiths. Did you look at their files? That's a horrible abuse of privacy. No files. Even as he spoke, J.E.D.D. Mason neither sped nor slowed, but made for the exit with a steady minimum of motion most practical for human limbs. He, Yapari Premenda. His eyes searched Carlyle for nation strat insignia. You speak only English? This cousin, raised by cousins, nodded. Then I cannot sufficiently explain. But J.E.D.D. Mason's feet still sought the door. What name was given you, Senseir? Carlyle Foster? What happened to this Bash's real Senseir? Carlyle blinked. They passed away, recently. Be careful with this Bash, Carlyle Foster. I exit now because I love truth. So I perceive I am a danger to this Bash, and it to me. That is clear. As clear to me as it was clear which of those loyal soldiers inside feared karma and which sin. You too seem to love good, and dialectic at least, if not raw truth. I advise you to part from this Bash before you harm each other. But I recognize your right to incur risk in service of your vocation. He lowered his voice. And your maker. Carlyle screamed inside at this last and deepest violation of that special privacy, which is the last thing in the world our cautious public still calls sacrosanct. It was no easy thing to distill his objections into words, so he watched in silence as this famous stranger, as strange as he was famous, made his soft retreat. The tribunary guards followed him closely, and one paused, turning back with a frown and gentle gesture of apology for her ward's strangeness. Moments later, the Utopian car took off, and J.E.D.D. Mason had vanished as abruptly as he had come. What then? It was too much, his strangeness, much too much. They needed answers, all of them. Once the drill troops were dismissed and the house secure once more, each Bash member turned to his favorite oracle. Occam and Sniper to their prisoners and their president, Cato and Eureka to their computers and their surveillance tapes, while Carlyle and Thisbe raced down the flower trench to me. Chapter the 17th. Tocqueville's Valet. Thisbe's summary had far less detail than my reconstruction of the scene, but it was enough. "He can't find Dominic?" I cried. "He?" Thisbe repeated, scowling. "What's up with you and J.E.D.D. Mason, Mycroft? No lies." I had not heard myself slip. "Martin and Dominic work for them." "That isn't what I asked." I feared Thisbe more as she hid behind the black curtain of her thick Indian hair, leaving me no chance to read her face. "They talked about you very familiarly. You know this person well. You knew the investigation was in their hands. You knew they might come here, but you didn't give us any warning. They were..." Adjectives failed her. "Like that." Bridger, still in my lap, winced at Thisbe's harshness. He had heard her summary. The Major, too, still seated on the rooftop of the dollhouse beside us with the fascinated soldiers in the plastic rooms below. "Are you okay, Mycroft?" Bridger asked, furrowing his smooth, young brow. "You're shaking." "I'm fine." I mussed his hair, using the gesture to disguise the moment when I whispered in his ear, "Start packing as soon as this is done." His eyes went wide, but good boy, he nodded. I met Thisbe's glare. "I see you've made the unilateral decision that Carlyle Foster is allowed to know where Bridger lives." That mistake stilled her a moment, and she looked around as if only now seeing the dollhouses and books and playthings piled in the secret cave. She turned to the veteran beside me. "Sorry, Major, I forgot. But I think we've all decided we can trust Carlyle now." I let my voice stay dark. "That's not your call, Thisbe." The Major shifted in his dull chair. "Done is done. You are the bigger question at the moment, Mycroft. What is there between you and this... We're talking about a hiveless tribune?" among many, many other offices, Thisbe loomed over me, including that they're Cornell Mason's child. Bosch child or real child? The major asked. Thisbe glared at his unmodern denial that the bond between Ba Kid and Ba Pa is as real as blood. I supplied the truth. Adopted son. And heir? The major asked. Thisbe indulged in a chuckle. No, can't blame you, Major, it's a modern thing. But Masonic emperors aren't dynastic. They're never succeeded by their children. It's a rule. The Porphyra gene is usually a familiaris, but they're the only familiaris who can't become Masonic emperor. The Major frowned pensively as he wrapped his head around that one. So, adopting a child makes them ineligible. Interesting choice. Now I want to know even more about this boy an emperor would choose to hold so close but block from the succession. Thisbe would not give an inch. It's not just the Masons. I knew vaguely about J.E.D.D. Mason, everybody does, but I read more on the way here. I knew they were Romanova's youngest tribune, but second youngest, I corrected. In 2299, Jiahia Rattlewatch was elected Black Law Tribune at the age of 15. It doesn't even require passing the adulthood competency exam. Thisbe punished my derailment by firing up the screen that sat beside the major and loading J.E.D.D. Mason's profile from last year's Romanov 710 list. They have some kind of insider advisor or legal position in five hives besides the Masons. Europe, the Cousins, Brill's Institute, the Mitsubishi, and us, too. I avoided her gaze. All the hive leaders have known J.E.D.D. Mason since they were a small child, and all the hive leaders are impressed by them, rely on them, and trust their counsel. That's why everybody gives them offices, and that's why they were trusted with investigating this crime that threatens all six. Why? Why does everybody trust them when they act like that? Confession? Karma? And their assistants, Dominic and Martin, how cultish can you get? I knew better than to meet her eyes. Martin's real name is Mycroft Guildbreaker. So what? J.E.D.D. Mason changed Mycroft to Martin in order to fit in with these other crazy cult things? Are they Boschmates? Carlyle interjected gently. Thisbe turned. What? Dominic. Martin and J.E.D.D. Mason, are they Boschmates? Bossibs? A Bosch interested in theology? The sensei tried his best to smile Thisbe's wrath away. It wouldn't have to be a cult. We see this sometimes, a Bosch interested in theology, who like to debate religion in secret and try their best to do so safely. Like Mycroft likes to. Bridger piped up, eager as a bird. Except I know that we're not supposed to. Carlyle smiled sweet forgiveness. Yes, like with Mycroft and you. It's okay when it's just two people, though. Sometimes it can turn cult-like with larger groups, which is why the first law bans unchaperoned discussions with three or more. But it usually starts as innocent exploration like you and Mycroft do. That's all this is, right, Mycroft? Dominic Seneschal is even a sensei. They may be doing officially sanctioned group sessions. I looked to the floor. You may not believe me, but I've had an urgent call. I need to go. Thisbe summoned a too sweet, too false smile, perfect to lure us to her candy house. Bridger, honey, get up off Mycroft for a minute, will you? Why? So I can pin them to the ground until they answer straight. Thisbe! Bridger settled more squarely in my lap, my brave defender. Why are you suddenly acting like you don't trust Mycroft? You know we can trust Mycroft. We can trust Mycroft more than anybody in the world. Mycroft's busy all the time with jobs, but they've been working as hard as they can to take care of all of us for years and years, harder than you work, Thisbe. A new expression surfaced on Thisbe, a smile far more terrifying than her glare. Mamadol intruded now, gentle and irresistible. Yelly people don't get cookies. Bridger crossed his arms as if to shield me. It isn't Mycroft's fault bad things are happening at your Bosch house. If Mycroft says we can trust J.E.D.D. Mason, and all the Hive leaders say we can trust J.E.D.D. Mason, and everybody else in the world says we can trust J.E.D.D. Mason, then I'll trust J.E.D.D. Mason. Why won't you? The witch crossed her arms, too. You didn't meet them. There's something unnatural about them. Witch again, Mycroft? I told thee I dislike that term. Apologies, reader. The memories of my thoughts and fears in this scene are rather overvivid. So what if there's something unnatural about them? The child shot back. Mycroft is weird. I'm weird. You're weird. The army men are weird. That's not important. I'm willing to go to J.E.D.D. Mason right now if Mycroft says I should. Not yet, I cried at once, surprised by the panic in my own voice. In the end, we'll go to J.E.D.D. Mason. But we need to put that off as long as possible. Why put it off, if you trust them? On Bridger's lips, the question was timid. Glaring in Thisbe's eyes, it was an accusation. Because there are dangerous people around J.E.D.D. Mason, I began. No, that's not the reason. It's because if we go to J.E.D.D. Mason, it'll be them who decides what happens to your future, Bridger, not you. I turned to the child, stroked his hair. It's best if you grow up a little more, have more ideas about what you want to do with your powers. In a few years, you'll be strong enough to decide things on your own, even to contradict J.E.D.D. Mason when you want to, but not yet. Best for now that you stay free. You may not have thought about it, reader, but free is not a word one hears much anymore. Not in its pure denotation. Almost everyone is so free these days, just as everyone is so healthy, happy, sentient, and alive, that one only mentions the quality if it is threatened. Unhealthy. Unfree. The major sighed his heavy veteran sigh. Mycroft, is J.E.D.D. Mason your Tocqueville? I swallowed. Yes. I see. Tocqueville? Thisbe repeated, frowning. A voice rose shrill from a lower floor of the dollhouse. I knew it! Ha ha ha! I knew it! See, I told you so! The major stomped the plastic roof beneath him, shouting down, Shut up, Croucher! I predicted it, didn't I? You all heard me. You never could trust them. A rumble like a lion surfaced in the major's voice. You don't want me to come down there, Croucher. Prompt silence proved the major right. I'm glad it was Bridger who asked, What's Tocqueville? The major smiled at the boy's confusion. It's our nickname for Mycroft's mysterious other obligation. Do you remember when you first met Mycroft? The golden smile on Bridger's face healed me, like sun upon a starving field. Of course. Mycroft was fixing the trash bots and saw Boo run out of juice. And Mycroft's smart, so they knew it wasn't just a U-beast, so they came to investigate. That's when you got them. I almost laughed. You got them. Such injustice to the army men. Their months of strategy, of gathering the tools, grenades as frail as firecrackers, darts of paralyzing chemicals, cannon size to them. They had spent months practicing, tackling cats and squirrels and dummies. An army of Lilliputians might tackle Gulliver in his sleep, but for 11 plastic army men to be ready at any moment to defend this boy against a full-sized human strained the limits of Earth's greatest military strategist. Strained, but did not exceed. They bested me. Me, Mycroft Canner. They spooked me with explosions, snared me with wires, blinded and deafened me with flash and smoke. It was hard, they said. I beat all 7 practiced plans and forced the major to improvise an 8th and then a 9th right there. But in the end, I fell. Then you remember how hard it was deciding what to do with Mycroft afterwards? The veteran continued. Bridger's face contorted, furrows unnatural on that angelic brow, not yet spoiled by time. I remember Mycroft was very big. The major chuckled. You were only 5 years old then. You can't expect to remember too much. Mycroft kept asking you to let them go for just 10 minutes. I remember them saying that over and over. Just 10 minutes, just 10 minutes. The major nodded, impressed that the words had stayed in Bridger's mind. But humans remember best what is most intense, no matter how long ago it happened. I myself have few memories from the past decade which seem remotely real compared with the memories of my 2 weeks 13 years ago. It may sound mad, but how do you distinguish between memory and reality, if not by choosing the more vivid? The smells and faces of those 2 weeks are burned into my mind, more colored, more alive than the commonplace sensations of this room, this floor, this half-written page before me. Every time I close my eyes and open them again, I am surprised to find myself in this strange present. This is not where I am. Back then is where I am. This pressure is a weapon in my hand. This itch, enemy skin beneath my nails. This taste of blood. Whose? What is this at my back? A rock? A wall? Surely if I step out, I will step onto my battlefield. I find it hard to make myself believe it is a chair. The army men's attack knocked off my tracker, I explained for Carlyle's sake. The police always check on me when that happens. It would have been a disaster if they'd found me here. The major nodded. Yes, it was lucky Mycroft managed to convince us to let them go for those 10 minutes. They were barely out of the trench before the cops were on them full force. It was not just luck, reader. I recall that day, full color, full intensity, one of few solid features in the long haze since my crimes. I remember the tiny soldiers staring up, piano wires striping my skin with red as they bound me to a scavenged chair. The memory is salient, not because of the pain or the blood, I think, for I have many scars whose stories are forgotten, but for the sensation of the bonds around my arms and ankles as I felt myself a prisoner. You must not think that bondage is one of my perversions. I have many, but not that. Rather, it linked that memory to another even more potent. The hours after my first capture 13 years ago, when I sat helpless as an insect in my plastic cage, were among the most intense I have ever experienced. So, when I found myself captured and bound again, that same helplessness awoke me. That, I am certain, was what cleared my mind so quickly. I suffered no shock, no disbelief seeing the soldiers, tiny and alive, before my eyes. I absorbed all that in an instant, pure acceptance of the miracle, and found my resolution just as quickly. I am here now to protect and guide this boy. Such salience made me persuasive as I pleaded for the gift of 10 minutes. We needed help, the major continued. A full-sized adult who could move things and get us things. So I decided to draft Mycroft. Draft them? Astonishment swept Carlyle's face. The major laughed. I don't mix well with civilians. But I'll never forget what Mycroft first said I was going to draft him. Have you ever read The Recollections of Alexis de Tocqueville? I smiled, remembering the major's face back then, my tiny captor, sternness brightening to relief, recognition, eventually to delight as I explained myself, my Tocqueville. He wasn't happy because of the revelation itself, but because of how I explained it, my literary roundabout, my subtle weaving words. That was the moment the major discovered what I am. I could have lied. I could have given my captor an unreserved yes, and stayed silent about any division of my loyalty. I did not. Tocqueville wrote a memoir of living through a French Revolution, the major explained, just as I had explained it to him 8 years ago and 15 yards away. Not the main one, the 1848 one. In one section, Tocqueville describes his valet. The valet wanted to join the revolution, but was also dutiful and loyal to his master. Every day the valet would come home from fighting, clean Tocqueville's shoes, brush his suit, prepare the room, then beg his master's leave and head back to the barricades for a few hours to risk his life again. He nodded to me. For Mycroft, minding Bridger is the barricades. Apparently J.E.D.D. Mason is the master. Thisbe loomed over me. Is that right? The truth caught in my throat a moment. Yes. Why? I glanced at Carlyle, so innocent of who sits before him, so calm and kind without knowing the surname Canner. I can't explain. Which basically means you're not objective on any question about J.E.D.D. Mason, Thisbe accused. You won't even answer a basic question like why they act like a crazy cultist. I looked down at my hands. I believe it is possible to be simultaneously biased and right. I work for... The major's eyes demanded truer words. I serve J.E.D.D. Mason. I do. I always will. I also, separately from that, believe that we can trust J.E.D.D. Mason better than anyone who isn't standing here right now. They are a good person. Good, honest, kind, trustworthy, and keep their promises more absolutely than anyone I've ever known. And they're unambitious. They have all the wealth and power anyone could want, the trust of every leader on earth. They have nowhere to rise, no side to help. There is no better being in the world. Believe me, there isn't. Possibly there never has been. They wouldn't exploit Bridger. They'd move sky and earth to find the best way to help Bridger use their powers for the good of all humanity. That's why I want to keep Bridger away from them for now. Because they're so good and so kind, they couldn't keep from pressuring Bridger to move too fast, to take on too much. I squeezed the child in my arms. A kid shouldn't have to face that much pressure. You saw how they tried to help that traitor security captain. They weren't being manipulative. They were being kind. Kind and too much trying to help. But they pushed too hard, made things uncomfortable. They're always like that. It takes a lot to learn to handle being near them. Once Bridger has their own plan for what they want to do first with their powers, once Carlyle, I pointed, helps Bridger to get ready to change the world, then we should go straight to J.E.D.D. Mason. And they'll make sure Bridger gets the best support the world can give. But J.E.D.D. Mason is too powerful and clumsy to be endured by anybody fragile. I don't mean powerful politically, but personally. You saw what talking to them was like. They speak only truth and do only good. And they don't know how to mitigate it the way people do. Someday, Bridger, you'll be ready for that. More than ready. I gave the child a squeeze and felt stronger addressing him who trusted me than Thisbe, whose glare stayed black. And when you are, you and J.E.D.D. Mason will make the whole world so impossibly much better. But only when you decide it's time. I was grateful during my ramble that they listened patiently, but even when I finished, they still waited, quiet, thinking on this stranger, his presence, the many facets of him I can only call too much. Thisbe spoke first. Tell me where J.E.D.D. Mason came from, Mycroft. Why did Cornell Mason adopt this particular kid? I know it was done in infancy. Whose child were they? She tried to grasp me by the hair, but I pulled away, so she had to lean far down to force my eyes to meet hers. Are the rumors true? Is J.E.D.D. Mason really Hotaka Ando Mitsubishi's bastard child? Oh, right, Carlyle cried. I'd heard that once. I thought it was just gossip. Still, Thisbe leaned close. Is this some weird alliance between the Masons and the Japanese Mitsubishi? They even say Mason helped Ando get the chief director's chair. I took a deep breath. I took several. To say there is an alliance of that kind is not untrue. I can't really say more. I have to go. Mycroft, her eyes turned gentle. Nothing is more important than, like a squeal of electronic pain, my tracker's emergency siren rang out, making Thisbe jump back and the Major draw his tiny flashing blade. Is this coming through? Harsh as bad music, the voice of Sensor Ancelet burst out of the speaker of my tracker for all to hear. Look, I don't know who's there, but the servicer in front of you happens to be one of the best statistical analysts on the planet. And right now, you have them ignoring a Priority One call from the Romanovan Sensor's office for an urgent analysis which has to be done yesterday. So unless whatever you're doing is more important than the economic future of the human race, would you kindly call Ekar and make them get their butt to Romanova and leave the odd jobs to people who can't save the world? Thisbe went slack-jawed. You would not think she could know me nearly a decade without learning what work I did, especially since you, who just met me, know already. But to you, demanding reader, I reveal all, while I hide what I can from friends to keep them safer. As for Carlyle, if your eyes are sharp, reader, you may now catch in his two blue eyes a glint of something darker than surprise. Can the censor hear us? Bridger mouthed. Only me, I mouthed back, then spoke aloud for the tracker. I'll be along ASAP, censor. I promise. Yes, I really mean it, I promise. I waited for Vivian to disconnect. There. They're gone. Was that really the Romanovan censor's office? Thisbe asked, almost agape. That was the censor themselves, I clarified. And before you ask, no, I can't discuss my work with Romanova, just as I can't discuss my work for J.E.D.D. Mason, just as you can't tell me the details of what you and Cato do for your own Bosch. I tried to let my features show my honesty. Don't make me lie to you, Thisbe. I can't tell you the truth about this, so either I say nothing or you force me to lie. I understand, the Major answered. I looked down at him, leaned forward to try to read his tiny features, but it is nearly impossible to read the subtleties of brow and cheeks on a face a centimeter high. His voice communicated more, intentionally gentle, restraining that commanding roar which rises like distant thunder behind even his calmest words. Bridger scooted forward off my lap. You have to go now. No, I don't. His eyes grew round as spoons. But, Bridger, you are more important than the economic future of the human race. All at once, and heedless of his weight, Bridger leapt back upon me with the fiercest hug I can remember. I trust you, Mycroft. I don't care about Tocqueville or J.E.D.D. Mason. I trust you. And I know you never tell me what to do, except when it really, really matters. And if you have to go, you have to go, so go. You'll come back. Small fingers squeezed my flesh. You always come back. I held him. For breath upon breath, I held him, and let him hold me. He trusted me. In this circumstance, when I was powerless to do anything but beg them to believe, I didn't have to beg. It didn't matter that Thisbe's eyes stayed dark. It didn't matter that worry wrinkled Carlyle's brow, that down in the dollhouse Private Croucher's mumbling was starting up again. Bridger trusted me. He trusted me despite my strangeness and my silences, despite the others' doubts. And better yet, he trusted himself, his judgment over theirs. He was so young, our precious protagonist, and yet already starting to trust himself. "I will not endure this pretense, Mycroft," you object. "I have indulged thy many eccentricities, thy he's and she's, thy titles, patriarch, philosoph, thy recurrent madness, calling Thisbe witch. I have even let thee honor J.E.D.D. Mason with the divine he. But thou canst not ask me to call this boy, who has barely raised his head here in thy tale, protagonist. In a history, it is absurd to call anyone protagonist. But, if thou must, it should be one who acts and understands, who drives the story forward. Bridger is not that." Must we have this argument, reader? We must, Mycroft. Thou takest too many liberties. Thou who claimst to be my servant and my guide, thou forcest upon me this opinion, biased by love, or, I suspect, by something baser, for thou, self-described pervert, has painted this boy, this angel, a bit too sensually at times. Read thine own words and see the cause of my distrust. I take no offense, my wary reader. I know it is hard to believe that Mycroft Canner would not harbor lust for Bridger, or for Thisbe, Sniper, Danae, or Ganymede, the many beasts and beauties with whom I have such easy contact. Later, the tale will prove my innocence. But I must have a protagonist. I struggle to open history's inner doors to you, to teach you how those who made this new era think and feel. In my age, we have come anew to see history as driven not by DNA and economics, but by man and woman, and so must you. Then have a protagonist if thou must, but not Bridger, the least active actor in thy drama. Who would you have then, master? Why not this sensei, Carlyle Foster? He has appeared more, seen more. He is intelligent, respectable, his opinions not too strange, his view an outsider's, like mine. No, reader. A protagonist must struggle, succeed, fail. His fate must determine whether this is comedy or tragedy. Carlyle would make our history too like the plays of Oedipus, whose audience just waits for the protagonist to learn of sins long past. J.E.D.D. Mason, then, whom thou holdest in such mad esteem? You do not yet know enough, reader, to speak his name. Fine, then. I accuse thee, Mycroft. Thou art the protagonist of thine own history, as all men are, as I am protagonist of the world which I experience. In my mind, I have called thee protagonist from the first page. Thou who art omnipresent in thy tale, and who walkest the corridors of power so familiarly, how couldst thou not be thy protagonist? I smile at the compliment, generous reader, but you are wrong. I have told you. The protagonist must determine whether this is comedy or tragedy. Surely the boy whose powers can reshape the universe itself will determine that. Not this tired slave, a tool for others' use, whose days of independent action are long done. I am the window through which you watch the coming storm. He is the lightning. There were some mumbled partings as I left for Romanova, reassuring Bridger of my return, the Major of my fidelity, and Carlyle and Thisbe. I remember only stiffness, my shame as I slunk past them, unable to make myself look up at the faces which held such well-justified suspicions. I should have said something, met their accusing eyes, and begged forgiveness for my necessary silence. J.E.D.D. Mason is not the only clumsy one, reader. I should have said something, anything, anything that might have stopped what Thisbe did 10 minutes later. Back in her room, with Carlyle in tow. "Eureka, could you help me a minute?" She asked it over her tracker, but spoke aloud in English for the cousin's sake. "Of course, Thiz, what's up?" Can you use your transit logs to track J.E.D.D. Mason? Sure. Thanks. I'm looking for their most frequently visited addresses, home and such, and cross-reference with Dominic Seneschal and Martin Guildbreaker. I think they may be Bosch mates. I just want to make sure there's no security problem or conflict of interest. That's Mycroft Guildbreaker, right? Yes, that's right. Imagine Carlyle's wide eyes, his trembling lips. Should we be doing this? He whispers. Thisbe mouths back the unassailable excuse. For Bridger's safety. Oh, Trixie. Xiaohe Huang. No car ID. No records in my system. Thisbe's dark brows arch with intrigue. What does that mean? They don't use our cars, Thiz. Seneschal and Guildbreaker do, but Xiaohe Huang never uses our cars. Doesn't even have an ID. They came today in a U-car, left in a U-car. Always U-cars. You have Utopian records too, don't you? Not the predictor data. But they do share flight paths and IDs. Found them. There they are now. Flight to Togyenkyo, loading past records. Great. What are the most frequent addresses? Romanovan Forum, Togyenkyo Director's Tower, Imperial Palace, Brussels. Those all sound like work addresses. Anything that isn't work? Here's one. All three go often. And Xiaohe Huang has lots of overnights there, at least one a week. Could be a residence, could be a lover. XX Rue, XXXX Avignon, France. I censor his address here, reader, though I could not hide it from Thisbe. That one looks good. Let's see if there's another place. Oh, black hole. Black hole. They go to the black hole. Wow, they go a lot. Black hole. Yes, the black hole. That's what Sydney and I call it. It's the most amazing place. We don't know what's there. We've been guessing for years. Great game. It's a place, and people go to it. You should see the patterns, Thisbe. So many visitors, so fast, so spicy cold. Nothing looks like that. And sometimes people go but hide the fact on purpose. They hitch a ride with somebody else, so there's only one car ID. But we can tell there's extra people from how much the car weighs, and lots of people do it, Thisbe. Lots all the time. They're trying to hide that they're going to the black hole, but they go over and over, sometimes for an hour, sometimes for a night, a weekend. But if somebody goes even once, they always go again, again, and again, and again, over and over and over, and some people stay forever. Forever? Forever, Thisbe. People go there, and they never leave. Never. They stay and stay and stay. There's people there who have been there for a decade and never gotten in a car, not once, just stayed in Paris for years and years. It's in Paris? Again, Thisbe's brow arches. Did yours arch too? Yeah, XX Boulevard, XXXX, Paris. Some people stay forever, and sometimes new people come out of it. People who were never ever in a car before, but they're not babies. They get married. They have to be adults. But they spent years never leaving the black hole. And J.E.D.D. Mason goes there? All the time. Are you going to investigate it, Thisbe? Awesome. Oh, I don't know whether to ask you to tell me the secret or not. It's Sydney's and my favorite guessing game. We have a bet on who can figure it out first. I guess if you win, we both lose. But it's cheating, actually, going there. It's work, Thisbe answered flatly. I'll tell you if security requires. Okay. Black hole, so cool. Do you need anything else? No, thanks. All set. Thank you. Sure. Thisbe signed off to face a pale and staring Carlyle Foster. Do you? He whispered it. Though no one was around, since whispers are the proper tone for fear and trespass. What do you intend to do?
Turn up and ring the doorbell.
But
we need to know about J.E.D.D. Mason, Carlyle. We cannot in good conscience leave Bridger in Mycroft's power while Mycroft is so obviously being controlled by this deeply weird person. You said it's probably a Bosch doing weird things with theology. Let's find out. He swallowed hard.
Is this allowed? I mean, using the car data like this?
Of course, I'm authorizing it. But just turning up? She finished fastening her boots. I've run the public searches. There's tons of cute photos of J.E.D.D. Mason as a child in famous people's arms and all the useless gossip you could want, but nothing to tell us what they're actually like or explain how they behaved upstairs today or why they have this hold on Mycroft. She caught herself. We need to know.
We're talking about walking up to a high-ranked politician's private home. There'll be a million security.
Then I'll flash my million credentials, she proclaimed. I'm a security officer for the Six Hive Transit System, Carlyle. I am authorized to take whatever measures I see fit to protect this Bosch and the welfare of the world. I have all the clearances I need, and while you're with me, you do too.
I hadn't thought of that.
She rifled in her closet for a jacket. I'd hoped you could help me investigate whether this is a cult or a theology Bosch, like you said, but I'll make do on my own if you're scared to come. I'm not saying I... Something inside the cousin started to feel stronger. I'll come, definitely. I'll come. I'll help. I agree we should investigate. We should investigate. I just... Avignon first, Paris second. The car will be here in a moment. Shall we head up? The cousin clutched his wrap.
Now?
Best to strike while we know Mycroft and J.E.D.D. Mason are both elsewhere. Urgency has a way of stifling caution and conscience.
Why Avignon first?
If the Paris address is so strange, it sounds like the heart of things.
Thisbe smiled her careful, calculating smile.
Because if Eureka Weeksbooth thinks this black hole in Paris is one of the most exciting places in the world, I want to know as much as I can before I ring that bell.
Chapter the 18th. The 10th Director. I failed to watch Carlyle. The car's flight granted me 71 minutes before I was locked once more in the silence of the censor's office, watching those numbers return and return, which my imagination always writes in Kohaku Mardi's blood. 33-67, 67-33, 29-71. But in the 71 minutes of my flight, I did not think of Carlyle. I could not. You may scold, reader, that I should have been more careful, that Bridger and his power, if real, are the most important thing in the world. But there is one whose call makes this world fall away from me like a dream. It was he, quick to keep his promise, who called over my tracker and bade me join his call to Togenkyo, where the nine directors, towering oaks whose umbrella branches shield and dominate the Mitsubishi billion, shuddered in the storm. That decision to hide this action from Occam's Anear in the first place is difficult to understand. This persistence in wanting to continue to hide the details from them now is frankly intolerable, and an insult to one of the most dedicated and worthy officers any of us has the privilege of working with. Chief Director Hotaka Ando Mitsubishi was the first voice I heard over the tracker. The video feed showed him at the head of the long table where the directors gathered, their spring suits livening the conference room with waterfalls and new grass, cats and calligraphy, clouds and koi. It was night already in Togenkyo, cloudy, and through the windows I could see the capital's skyscraper towers painting their lotus shapes and strokes of light against the black canvas of sea and starless sky. They're an officer of another hive, not ours. The directors speak English in the conference room, the compromise language which makes no claim about which nation strat is strongest. Ando scowled.
Humanist or not, we must trust Occam Samir every day with the welfare of our hive and all its members.
True.
It was Director Huang En Lai who answered, the squat and hardy leader of the Dongbei region sub-nation strat, not the most powerful of the five Chinese directors, but the safest in his seat, anchored by 6 decades' experience and the loyal votes not of his small home region, but of the multitudes of Chinese members too fed up with the endless tussles between the Beijing and Shanghai blocks to throw a vote to either.
I agree. We can trust Occam Sonir in almost every situation, but there are different kinds of trust. I trust my doctor with my life, but not my dirty laundry.
And Occam Sonir doesn't trust the transit system to people who infiltrate their homes under false pretenses. Ando's glare swept the faces of the 5 Chinese directors.
I spoke with President Ganymede. They have agreed to keep this incident a secret to avoid a public panic, but they are justifiably furious. The special guard we provided for the Sonir Weeksbooth Bash is the oldest and deepest seal of friendship between our hives, and much more than symbolic. Having them undermine Sonir within their own Bash house jeopardizes generations of carefully cultivated relations.
Old Huang En Lai gave a little sigh.
I'm not saying it was a good idea. I'm saying that revealing the entire back end of how it happened is itself a different bad idea.
How bad?
Ando looked from face to silent face. The rift this could create between us and the humanists is the largest crisis we've faced in years. If airing a small piece of dirty laundry can prevent that, it is more than worth it.
Silent faces stared back.
I hope you're right, Kim Jong-uk spoke up now, Korea's hard-won lone director. But if you aren't, if revealing the truth to Sonir and Ganymede would be more dangerous than the rift this is already causing, all the more reason for whoever authorized this action to speak up and let the entire directorate know what we're really dealing with.
The deep lines of years well spent made Director Huang En Lai's frown fold in on itself like a bulldog's.
It should be possible for us to apologize to them without revealing every detail.
By this point, they know enough to ask very specific questions.
How much?
Huang asked quickly.
What are we sure they know?
Chief Director Ando raised his eyes to the camera.
Tycoon?
All turned bodily toward the projected image, which made young J.E.D.D. Mason seem to sit at the table with them. To say they listened intently to him is too commonplace. This was a different focus, deep, as when Utopia sent a brave and precious probe to skim the surface of all-swallowing Jupiter, and the silence breaks, and the technicians lean raptly over their screens to piece together meaning from this first fuzzed data stolen from the heavens. So these 9 men locked upon the words of their unofficial 10th director.
Occam Sonir knows with the certainty of perception,
J.E.D.D. Mason began,
that those whom I exposed were torn by guilt, but believe themselves to be acting in a good cause, and a peaceful one. They know with the certainty of testimony that the Sonir Weeksbooth Bash and the transit system itself were not endangered by the action. They know with the certainty of analysis that the Mitsubishi Special Guard and their confederates received orders whose pull was stronger than the triple counterpull of their loyalty to their fellow troops, their respect for Occam Sonir, and their concern for the safety of the lives endangered should the transit system suffer from their action. And they know with the certainty of experience that events which are improbable and proximal are likely to have a causal link. Thus, they know with the certainty of deduction that one of you ordered the special guard to steal the Kanner device.
The frowns birthed by his answer were resigned, not critical. Do you think they will accuse the directorate directly? Kim asked.
In their heart, they must have already.